Okay, so we are holding on Nun Gimel Amud Aleph on by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ketzed Mevatla. So how are you Mevatla and Avodah Zarah? There are actual actions that are involved. And I mentioned yesterday that Amar brings from the Mordechai and other Rishonim that want to say that this is all talking about if the Goy is doing it under duress. But if he's doing it willingly, you don't necessarily need all the any of the actions mentioned in this Mishnah. It's good enough if he does it willingly.
It works under duress.
We learned from the previous part that it will send to the rest. We have the case over there where he slapped the guy and then forced him to death.
It's kind of questionable.
But it's not questionable about what that is. It works. Okay.
Based on what?
Based on that the Avodah Zarah can be nistatel by a guy who no longer believes in it as an object of worship.
And then
the fact that he did an act of bittul to it makes it bittul regardless whether he wanted to or not. So the Mishnah says, case of Mevatla, how are you Mevatla on Avodah Zarah? Kata Rosh Ozna, if he cut off the end of the tip of its ear, or Rosh Chotma, or the tip of its nose, or Rosh Ba, or the tip of its finger, so something from it, or Pachsa Apishle Chisra, or he dented it, even if no actual metal or whatever is missing from it, all of those is considered to be Mevatlet. One of the Mepharshim on Mishnayot Shoshanim LaDavid, it's called, explains that each one of these is a greater Chiddush than the previous one. Cutting off the end of the ear is like what you do to, it's sort of like what you do to an Eved Ivri. You pierce a hole in his ear by the door. So therefore, that's for sure your Mevatlet. But even cutting off the tip of its nose, which is not necessarily that kind of thing, nevertheless, even that is Mevatlet. Even cutting off the end of a finger, which is even less degrading to it, is enough. And even
something degrading than an ear.
No, but the point is, an ear is what you do to a slave, and a nose is not necessarily. And then pachta, the dentist, is the biggest chiddush of all, even though nothing is missing. Right. On the other hand, rock before now. On the other hand, if the guy spits in its face, hishtin before now, or urinates in front of it, gerera, or he drags it around in the mud, or zorach baratasaya, or he threw dung at it, I'd raise it in a potato, then in all those cases, it's not possible.
The reason being,
because as the Gemara is going to say, that's just in a momentary fit. He's upset at the Avodah Zarah temporarily, and therefore he does these things. He's still going to end up going back there. And the Ritva brings, he wants to say that since the expressions in the Mishnah are in past tense, rock before now, ishtim before now, and that implies only if it's a one-time thing, but if it's an ongoing thing, then maybe that could be considered bittul. So we had in the previous paragraph, we had the story over there with the bathhouse of Aphrodite, where one argument was that people were always urinating and everything in front of it. On the other hand, the Gemara says there that may be a little different, because we can see there, l'chatchila, it was made for that purpose. It was never made as an object of worship. Over here, it was made as an object of worship, so maybe that doesn't necessarily apply. Okay, anyway. Machra in Mishkana, if the guy sold the Avodah Zarah, or he gave it away as a mashkin, and we're not talking about it was a mashkin and the next day he comes and redeems it. We're talking about he left it there for a considerable amount of time, such that now he pretty much gave up on it. So Rebbe says it means he was mevatlet by selling it or giving it as a mashkin, and the Chachamim say no, for reasons that we'll discuss in the Gemara what the exact machlokes is. Okay, so the Gemara asks, first of all, when we said the fourth thing we had in the Mishnah was that if you dent it, even though there's nothing missing, pachta, you have to ask Tila Chisra, my bitla. If nothing's missing from it, how does that constitute bitla?
Well, the shape is missing.
But that's the answer. Omer of Zedosh, pachta b'fanehah. The answer is, we're not just talking about he dented it someplace on his body or whatever. He actually dented its face, as in he hammered out, so now its face is flattened, and its appearance has changed, therefore that's considered bitla. On the other hand, we said rock of...
In other words, he dents a foot or...
If he just dents a foot or whatever, that wouldn't necessarily be considered bittul. Yeah. But if he actually dents... And we don't just mean a dent in the face. Shepach Samchaneh means the kilkel therotter, actually. Because he ruined its visage. So like he flattened it out, kind of like... Okay, then we said rock of Pufneh v'hishnim v'fneh. We said if he spit in front of it, or in his face, or urinated in front of it, or whatever, all these various things, it's not bittul. Menahani, really, where do we know that from? You have a pasuk in two pasukim back to back in Yeshaya that say like this. The first one goes, V'hoyak yirav v'iskasa. It will happen when he, meaning the goy, is hungry and he gets angry. He gets upset. The kilo b'malkoy v'elikav. He'll start cursing out his king and his god. Ufanol amayla, and he'll turn upward. In other words, he'll start thinking to himself, I'm not getting anything useful out of this avodah zarah anyway. Maybe Tachim, the Sefarana got that himself. Maybe he starts looking up. But then, but the next pasuk continues, he looks back down, he looks down to the ground, sort of a hashesh of a gomer, and there is trouble and darkness, in other words, meaning, even though he got to the point where he's cursing his king, and he's cursing his god, and turning upward, and then and ready to accept Hashem, nevertheless, he still ends up looking right back down to his avodah zarah, and makes his peace with it. So unless he did something that actually constitutes bittul, those things we just assume that it was a temporary fit like that, and therefore says he's not mevatel. Then we said, and then you learn a Musa Dikavart from it. Or Chaim Shmulevitz points out a Musa Dikavart from this. You see from this, it's not enough to have Vaseitov. Ultimately, you needed at some point do the deal with the Sumer as well. Otherwise, you're just going to go right back to where you were before. Yeah. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah Machra. Whatever, they had their ideas behind it, but whatever, the point is, yeah. Okay. I mean, we'll talk more about it on Ramadan Day when we talk about what the Jewish people did with the eagle, but yeah. Machray Mishkana, we said if the guy sells or gives his avodah zarah or gives it as a mashkin, Rebbe and a bittul, we'll call it. So we said Rebbe says that constitutes bittul, and the Chachamim say not. So, Ze'iri Omer Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba Omer Rab, so we have a machloikis. On the one side, we have Ze'iri in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. On the other side, Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba in the name of Rab. Chad Amar Machloikis B'Tzorif Ovid Gechavim. One says that the Machloikis in our Mishnah is if the goy sold it to a goyish smith. So he sells it to another goyish smith. That is, the Chachamim are going to say it's not bottle, because the original goyish owner is going to figure this second goy who bought it is probably not going to necessarily melt it down. He's going to worship it. He might, but he might not. On the other hand, Abel B'Tzorif Yisrael, but if he sells it to a, but if he sells it to a Jew, no, it's not so obvious. Wait. But if he sells it to a Jewish smith, Divrei Hakol Bittul, then everybody would agree, even the Chachamim, that he is mevatel, because what else is the Jew going to do with it except melt it down and sell it as themselves? It's not so obvious, no. Wait. That's one opinion. B'chad Amar B'Tzorif Yisrael Machlokas. The other one says no. When it comes to a Jewish smith, is where the Machlokas is. That then the Chachamim are going to say it's not bottle, because what may happen is the goy may figure, not necessarily is the Jew going to melt it down. After all, if he does, to him all it's worth is the value of the metal in it.
Yeah.
To a goy, it's worth more than that.
Yeah.
The first goyish owner may figure, yes, I sold it to a goy to a Jewish smith, but not necessarily is he going to melt it down. He may well go and sell it intact to another goy, where he'll be able to get more money for it than he would if he just sold it a scrap metal. He may not be allowed, but the goy is not going to necessarily know that. The yid himself is not necessarily going to follow what the halacha is. He may figure there's extra money to be made over here, so, and then therefore he may. So therefore the goy doesn't necessarily take into consideration that the Jew is going to end up melting it and using it as scrap metal. Whereas Rebbe would hold that he does. Now, by the way, before we can... according to that second way of looking at it, if it was Yisrael, Rebbe would say that he was Mevatelus, because we assume the goy is going to assume that this being a Jewish smith is Mesama going to melt it down. The Chachamim would say not necessarily, because the Jew may equally well turn it around and sell it to another goy, and therefore it'll continue to be worshipped. Therefore, he's not Mevatelus. Now, before we even continue with the Gemara, we have to ask the question, do we mean Davka a smith or not? So Rashi says not necessarily. When we talk about over here, the Mishnah didn't say anything about a smith. The Mishnah said Machra and Mishkana. When we have in these two opinions over here, that it's B'tzorif Ovid Gechavim or B'tzorif Yisrael, a B'tzorif being a smith, do we necessarily mean a smith or does it mean anybody? Rashi learns that it means actually anybody. It doesn't even matter whether he's normally a smith, whether he deals in scrap metal and melting it down or whatever. The same principle that we're saying over here, that according to one opinion, only if he sold it to a fellow goy is there a machloikas, but if he sold it to a yid, it's for sure bottle. Or the second position, that even if he sold it, that if he sold it to a yid, is a machloikas. That is not necessarily talking about a smith. Practically speaking, because according to that way of looking at it, the Gemara is mentioning, according to both these opinions, a smith, because who else would buy scrap metal if not a smith? But in principle, the same din would apply whether he's a Smith or not. Even if it's a regular yid, the same principle would apply. Either according to one opinion that a yid is for sure going to break it up, whereas a goy may continue worshipping it, or the second way of looking at it is a Jew, whether he's a Smith or not, may break it up or may resell it. So according to Rashi, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a Smith. The Mishnah, the Gemara, is using the word Sardis because practically speaking, that's usually who scrap metal like that would be sold to. A number of other Rishonim, the David, the Ramban brings from him, etc., say no, it specifically does mean a Smith. It specifically in both cases does mean that the Yid or the Goy, as the case may be, is a Smith. Tosfos takes a sort of in-between view. Tosfos says, when we're talking about a Jew, regardless whether he actually works as a Smith or not, we can assume the two possibilities, the two ways of looking at it. Either being a Jew, he's definitely going to brace it up, whether he actually deals in scrap metal or not, or that not. On the other hand, when we're talking about a Goy, then we have to be, Tosfos says, we have to be talking about he actually works as a Smith. Because otherwise, a Jew, we could say not necessarily, according to Tosfos, we could say not necessarily, but a Goy, for purposes of this discussion, has to be a Smith. Because if it's not, then what's the haba? I mean, if Goy A sells it to Goy B, and Goy B is not a Smith, then why would there be a haba? I mean, it's a thing that may, why would there be a possibility to think that Goy B is not going to worship it and is going to break it up and sell it as scrap metal when he doesn't deal it? Whereas it actually says the other way around. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether there's Smiths or not. The same principle, the same machlokas would apply either way.
Okay. The Mishnah did not say a Smith. The Mishnah said
Machra in Mishkina. The Mishnah didn't say anything about Jews or Goyim. The Gemara says Tzoris. But that's the question. Does it mean it has to be a Tzoris? Or does it mean the Gemara is mentioning Tzoris because typically that's who would buy such things? So again, you have three different opinions. You have Rashi says that it doesn't matter, Jew or Goy, whether he's a Smith. You have the Raivan who says no, Jew or Goy, it has to be talking about he actually works as a Smith. And Tosfos is saying, if it's a Jew, it doesn't matter. If it's a Goy, if it's a Goy, it does. So halfway between Rashi and the Rashi. Okay. Anyway. Now, the second opinion said, the third of Yisro Machloikas, that Machloikas is in the case of where it was sold to a Jew. So we boil it. So now we have to clarify what that second opinion means. The third of Yisro Machloikas doesn't mean the Machloikas in our Mishnah only applies if the buyer was a Jew. Aval third of Ovid Kachavim Duvahakal Loi Bizzle, but we could say according to that second opinion, if the buyer was a Goy, then it's definitely not Bizzle. Oidum of Ben Bezeh Machloitis. Or maybe the second opinion means either way, whether the buyer is a Jew or a Goy, either way there's the Machloitis, where Rebbe will say it's Bizzle and Machachavim will say it's not. So, Toshna. The Omer Rebbe, come, we can prove from a Braisa, in which Rebbe says, look, you have this machloikas between me and the Chachamim in the Mishnah. However, Nirin Dvarai Kshemachra L'Chabala, it seems more acceptable, it seems more logical to accept my opinion, that it's Basel, when he sold it L'Chabala, where on the face of it, L'Chabala means for destruction, but we'll discuss soon what it means. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it seems more logical to accept the opinion of the Chachamim, of my colleagues, when he sold it La'ovda, which on the face of it means to be worshipped. So that's where we have to figure out what Maila Chabala or Maila Ovda, what do those terms mean? Now, by the way, Rashi makes the point of that what Rebbe means, at least according to our current understanding of Rebbe, is when Rebbe says bitzel, he means across the board, whether it was sold by Chabala or whether it was sold by Oga, in whatever way we're going to define those terms too. Same way when the Chachamim said loy bitla, it means regardless. That's how Rebbe and his colleagues learned respectively from their rebbeim. However, Rebbe says, if we want to make some kind of compromise, I hold my opinion. I learned from my rebbeim that bitla regardless, whether it was sold by Chabala or Oga. My colleagues learn that it's not Balto, whether it's the Chabala or La'ovda. It seems more logical to accept my opinion and the opinion of my Rebbeim, that it is Balto, when it was sold the Chabala, and only limit it to that case, and say, on the other hand, if it was sold La'ovda, then we should accept the other Chachamim's opinion. Right. So, my La'chabala or my La'ovda. So we have to ask, what does it mean, La'chabala and La'ovda respectively? Elaim al-Chabala, La'chabala mamish, La'ovda mamish, does it mean at face value? La'chabala means that the guy sold it, telling the buyer, go ahead and destroy it. And La'ovda means he sold it to him and told him, here is an Avodah Zarah, please go worship it. Well, then my time and demand arm would be sold, my time and demand arm allowed bit sold. Then what would be the logic? Why in that case, if it was so, if, again, Revy is explaining that his opinion that he says it's bottle applies across the board. So if it's sold la'ovda, if the guy specifically says when he's selling it, please continue worshipping it, why would Revy say it's bottle? And on the other hand, if he sells it explicitly l'chabalah, take this idol and destroy it, why would the Chachamim say it's not bottle? So it can't mean that. El alav, so must it not mean, l'chabalah means l'misha osit l'chabalah. L'chabalah, then, for destruction, would mean not that he explicitly tells him, go ahead and destroy it, but he sells it to somebody who the likelihood is going to destroy it. Umanu third of Yisrael, namely, that would be a Jewish smith. Or, according to Rashi, it doesn't have to be a smith, whatever. He sells it to somebody who is likely to destroy it, namely a Jewish smith, for whom we can take the view it has no more value to him than just as a piece, than just as a trunk of metal. Yeah. La'ovda, and when we say he sells it for worship, doesn't mean that he explicitly says, please continue worshipping it. It means la'imisha osid la'ovda, it means he sells it to somebody who's likely to continue worshipping it, umanu third of ovid gechavim, namely a goyish smith. And since Rebbe says, if we want to make a compromise, here's how we should compromise, which is to distinguish between the Chabalah and La'ovda, but neither Rebbe's Rebbeim, nor his colleagues' Rebbeim, when they taught their respective opinions, said anything about the Chabalah or La'ovda, I mean, they hold across the board, well, Shmamin Abem Bezeh, Abem Bezeh Machlokas. Well, then that would show that Machlokas applies whether the buyer was a Goy or whether the buyer was a Yid. So that could work according to either of the Amidoyim before. Again, we had Rav Yochanan versus Rab, one who said the Machlokas is if the buyer was a Goy, but when it's a Jew, then everybody agrees it's bottle. The other one saying when a Jew buys it, then that's the Machlokas. And we weren't sure, does that imply that if a Goy bought it, for sure it's not bottle. Based on this Braita, it seems we have to say that the Machlokas applies either way, whether it was sold to a Jew or whether it was sold to a Goy. So in that case, according to the first opinion of the Amoraim then, it would mean that if it was sold to a Goy, Rebbe would hold its bottle because he sold it, and the Goy will probably break it up to scrap metal. The Chachamim will say, well, not, because he sold it to a Goy who will probably worship it. If it was sold to a Yid, even the Chachamim would have to agree that it is bottle. That would be the first opinion. The second opinion would say, it doesn't matter whether the buyer is a Jew or a Goy. Either way, Rebbe will say it's bottle because he'll probably break it up, and the Chachamim will say he won't, and the Chachamim will say it's not bottle because he won't necessarily break it up. If it's a Goy, he'll worship it, and if it's a Yid, he'll resell it to another Goy.
In the first opinion, again?
In the first opinion, we're saying, so far, that if the buyer was a Goy, Rebbe is going to say that it's bottle because even though the buyer was another Goy, he probably bought it for scrap metal and will break it up. If he sold it to a Yid, Rebbe would say it's definitely bottle for the same reason. And the Chachamim would say if it was sold to a Goy, then it's not bottle because he's probably going to worship it. If he sold it to a Yid, sure, it's bottle. That's the first opinion. The second opinion would say it doesn't matter whether he sold it to a Yid or a Goy. Either way, Rebbe will say it's bottle because we assume that he bought it and he's going to break it up. The Chachamim would say we assume it's not bottle because if it's a Goy, he may worship it, and if it's a Yid, he may go and resell it to somebody else because they'll get a higher price for it than he would for just the scrap metal. So therefore, based on this braita, that's how it seems we have to understand it. At least that part about the part about where the machlokas exists. The answer is loy. No, that's not necessarily the way you should understand the braita. Hakad karma, because you could argue what the braita means is as follows. Omer Rebbe, nirin dvarai l'chaverai. What Rebbe says, not that if you're going to make a compromise between my opinion and my colleague's opinion, then here's how you should make it by distinguishing between the Chabalah and the Oda, to whom it was sold. Rather, maybe what Rebbe means is, my colleagues agree with what I say. Nirin Dvarai doesn't mean it seems more logical to accept my opinion. My chaverim, my colleagues, accept my opinion that it is bato kishamachra l'chabala when he sold it for destruction. And what does it mean for destruction? Umanu third of Yisrael, namely he sold it to a Jew. Because the whole case where my colleagues argued with me is where he sold it la'ovda, where he sold it to a Goy who may continue worshipping it. But if he sold it to a Yid who was likely to destroy it, they would be Moida. So in that case, if we understand the Braisa that way, then the Machlokas is only when he sold it to a, only when he sold it la'ovda, right? Only when he sold it to a Goy, but not. According to that second way, right, you can understand, so it would work, it still wouldn't work according to the second opinion of Amoraim before, fine, they could still understand the Braisa the first way, but not necessarily, okay. but you could understand the Braisa to mean that if it was sold that if it was sold to a Jew, that everybody is going to agree it is bottle, and only if it was sold to a guy, that would be where the machlokes is, which works according to the first opinion of the Amoraim over there. So if we understand the Braisa that way, then it could mean that way. But at least you have two possible ways of understanding the Braisa. So far we don't have a contradiction yet. Tosfos has a bit of discussion over here based on a different Girsa, because after all, the way we're understanding the Braisa now, we're still kind of leaving the question open. According to the second Manda Omar that said the Machloekas is when the buyer was a Jew, we're sort of leaving the question open. We're showing how the Braisa can be understood according to the first opinion. We still haven't clarified according to the second opinion what would be the din if it's sold to a guy. Is it bottle according to Rebbe or not? So therefore, Tosfos brings another Girsa. They bring us from the Rivan, another Girsa over here that the Gemara ended off with that first question, Teku. And then it continues with the statement of Rebbe as sort of an independent thing to try and prove one way or the other, whether we can prove Rabbi Yochanan's or Rav's opinion. So not to clarify Rav's opinion, not to clarify the second opinion over there, but rather to see can one or the other of them be supported from this Braisa. And we're saying they can both be supported from this Braisa, because you can understand the Braisa two ways, but nevertheless, after all said and done, we don't really have a way of understanding from this Braisa whether the second opinion about when it was sold to a Yid, to understand from it what would be the case if it was sold to a Goy. Do they argue whether it's bottle or not? You wouldn't really necessarily see that from this Braisa.
And therefore?
So that's it. So in other words, that's why Tosfos inserts the word keiku to say that particular detail, we don't know the answer. But now we're going to discuss the more general question, can we prove one or the other of these Amoraim? And we said that we can prove either one, because you can't disprove either one from this Braisa. If you need the Gemara, maybe. Okay, I have another contradiction. Halakeach gutar. Well, we don't know yet. No. We're going to try to bring another proof from later in our Masechta, that we're going to try to bring a proof one way or the other on this machloikas, on this machloikas of Amoraim, how to understand the machloikas of our Mishnah. We're going to try to prove one way or the other whether we can support one of those opinions or not. A Mishnah says later on in our Masechta, halakeach gutois min ovid kachavim, if somebody buys scrap metal from a guy, umot ben ovid kachavim, and then among the scrap metal he finds an intact idol, so what do? And the point is that within the scrap metal. Now the problem is, of course, if that idol comes into his possession, it's going to be also bahana, and there's no bittul for it. So what do? Im actually not a noise moshach. If he did meshicha on scrap metal before paying money, yachzer. Then what he does is he returns everything to the guy. Then the guy can be mevatel avodah zarah, and then if the Jew wants to redo the deal, then he can do that. The reason is, now normally meshicha is a kinyan. The thing is, the reason why we don't say over here he did meshicha, it's considered that he was kohen in the avodah zarah, because it's called mekach tos. He would never have bought this consignment of scrap metal if he knew there was something in it that's also bahana. Well, he would have deducted it from the price, whatever. He wouldn't be paying for the weight of an avodah zarah, which he can't use. So therefore, it's a mechachos, therefore he can undo the whole deal. Im nishanosan, maris moshach, on the other hand, if he already paid and then he did meshicha, then he doesn't have the ability to return it to the guy. It's too late to return it to the guy because, Rashi says, the reason is, if he were to undo the deal at that point, it would look like he's selling avodah zarah to a guy. As long as money hasn't changed hands yet, fine, he's undoing the deal. He's not selling something yet. But once money has changed hands, and
he could get it for free.
If he's undoing the deal and getting his money back,
yes,
then that amounts to he's selling avodah zarah to the guy, and you can't do that. It's also bahana. Therefore, the only possibility is yoylich the yamamela. Therefore, you have to take the value of this avodah zarah and throw it into the yamamela. Now, how does that relate to our case?
It really would not be a sell.
In principle, it shouldn't be, but it looks like staying.
And that's enough. To be canceled.
So, okay. The point is, therefore, so we're talking about here a case of a guy selling an avodah zarah to a Jew,
right,
and we're saying that it's osur, and it's not bottle. We don't say that the guy automatically selling it was Mavatel. So, Iyam, it's a shleim of a tzor if you throw a machloikas. Now, going back to our Mishnah then, if you say that the machloikas, if you say, like, the second opinion of the Amoraim above, that
if the guy left it by mistake into the scrap, with the scrap metal.
Well, that's what the Gemara is going to answer. But wait, we don't realize that yet. At this point, we think that the guy put it in there deliberately.
Right.
That he knew he was selling it.
Wait.
Going back to the earlier part of our Sivya, if you say the Machloikas in our Mishnah between Rebbe and the Chachamim is when he sold it to a Jewish scrap metal dealer, to a Jewish smith, well then, Halmani Rabbanani, then fine, you can say that Mishnah later on is according to the Chachamim. They say it's not Batal in our Mishnah. By the same logic, it's not Batal over there. The Mela, he didn't pay money yet, then he can undo the sale, but if he already paid money, then it's too late. No Bittal was done. Eli, I'm at the third of Chav Machloikas, but if you're going to say, according to the first opinion, that the whole argument in our Mishnah is only if you sold it to a guy, but that if you sold it to a Jewish smith, we said before, the first opinion was that everybody would agree it's Batal, Homani, then who is that Mishnah later on life? It's not like Rebbe and it's not like the Chachamim. Because once he sold it to a Jew, automatically it should be Batal. Therefore, there should be an issue whether you paid money yet or not. And the fact that doesn't work, so, the answer is no. Shiny Hossam, da daita de gru tois zovin, a daita de avertis de chavim lay zovin. The difference is that when the guy sold it in the first place, he didn't even know that, right? He didn't even know that there was a statue in there. So when he knows there's a statue in there, then you can discuss the question, is he knowingly being mavapalot or not?
Yeah.
You can say, again, one explanation of our Mishnah is you can say, if he knows there's an avertis zara in there, he knows that he's selling it, therefore Rebbe can argue it's bottle, and the chachamim can argue that it's not. The Avodah Zarah, there's a statue. As opposed to...
David Mavatel, by
the very act of selling. On the other hand, that Mishnah later on, in our Masechtah, is talking about he didn't even know there was an Avodah Zarah there, therefore there's no Bittul.
Right.
So that's not necessarily relevant. So by the way, this whole last discussion over here also, this is one of the proofs that this is one of the proofs that Tosfos and also that Tosfos and that Ivan discussed on the question we said before. We doubt we're talking about a smith, or are we talking about even somebody who's not a smith, but just practically speaking, who buys scrap metal? One thing is, the Gemara is arguing over here that if you say the Machloikas in our Mishnah is only about a goyish smith, then who would that Mishnah go like? Why don't we say, well, very simple, the Mishnah there is talking about, the Mishnah over there is talking about a non-smith, our Mishnah is talking about a smith. And the Ravid says not, two different cases, the Ravid says not necessarily, because here we're talking about buying scrap metal. Of course, who buys scrap metal, a smith. Whereas in our Mishnah earlier, not necessarily can you say just because when you're selling an Avodah Zarah as is, not necessarily is the only possible buyer of it a smith. The actual halacha, by the way, given that you have, so the Gemara hasn't really figured out, in the end, we don't really have a conclusion one way or the other what the machloikas in our Mishnah is. So what ends up is like this, therefore. Given that we have, according to the two possibilities over here, is you have either that if he sells it to a goy, then the chachamim would say it's not bottle and Rebbe says it is, whereas if you sell it to a yid, it's definitely bottle. The second way of looking at it was that if you sell it to a yid, the chachamim will hold it's not bottle and Rebbe will hold it is. And if you sell it to a goy, then we said we can't... Right, well, no, not really the reverse. As we said, does it mean that if you sold it to a goy, it is for sure bottle? Or does it mean that if you sold it to a goy, you have the same machlokes? So the bottom line is, in Shulchan Aruch, both opinions are brought. You have the Rambam paskins according to one of the Lashonis in the Gemara over here. In Shulchan Aruch, on the other hand, you have the Rosh, and you have other Rishonim, who argue for the other position, and therefore in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions. In other words, so what it is like this: what it says in Shulchan Aruch, if a guy sold or mashkind an avodah zarah, even to a Jewish smith, it's not bottle. Yesh matirin if it was a yisrael. So those are the two different versions, and those are the two different
yesh
matirin if the buyer was a Jew.
So yesh matirin means.
Means that some Rishonim, in particular the Rambam, hold that it's mutter if the buyer was a Jew. Because we're saying the halacha is you have both possibilities in Shulchan Aruch. You have the first opinion in Shulchan Aruch is that it's not bottle, which is the opinion of the Rosh. And then you have, the Rambam says that if the buyer was a Jew, then it's bottle. So you have both opinions. The usual rule is that the first opinion that the Mechaber brings is the one he considers the most primary. So therefore, we should say that it's not bottle, but I guess it's one of those things. Again, if it's a hefted merubo, a shaset chak, or whatever, then you can be make according to the Rambam. Fine. Turn it up on it. We learn in a price. The more cases about when a guy is mevatel or not mevatel, whatever it is, right? Lava aleha, if a guy borrows money against an avodah zara, so he uses it as a mashkin, or oshen nafla aleha mafolus, or a building collapsed on top of the statue, and the guy didn't go to the trouble to try and remove the rubble in order to retrieve the statue, oshen gavur listin, or robbers stole it, and he doesn't try to get it back from them. Or the owner abandoned it and went overseas. In all those cases, it depends. If they plan to return like happened in the wars of Yeshua, now, on the face of it, what that sounds like it means is that after Yeshua's wars, after the wars that the Jewish people conquered out of Israel, the Amori returned. The Gemara is going to ask later, they didn't. So we'll clarify soon what it means. But for right now, let's go through the Benaisa. If the guy plans to return for it, like in the wars of Yeshua, ain't a betela, then it's not bottle.
Because they never return.
They never return. The Gemara is going to ask that soon. The Gemara is going to ask on that lashon soon. But right. but the point is, if the guy plans to return, then it remains awesome. Because, in other words, what happens, so let's say, for example, this guy borrowed money and used it as a mashkin or whatever.
Right.
If he eventually plans to pay off his loan and get back the avodah zarah, then it's not bottle. If, on the other hand, he gave up on it, forget it, I'm defaulting on the loan, I'm never going to never have any hope of paying it back, then we can say it's bottle. And the same thing with the other cases. If rubble fell on it or whatever, does he ever, right now he's not going and dealing with it, but does he have plans to eventually return and clear away the rubble and take it, or has he given up on it forever? Now, why does the Braisa, so thus far the Braisa, now let's analyze it. In particular, Olamis actually is the gear that has the word Olamis. It's never bottle. And we'll talk soon why that's important. But anyway. So now let's analyze the Braisa. We need all these cases in the Braisa. The Braisa had to mention all these cases where he borrowed money or against it, or rubble fell on it, or robbers stole it, or he left it and went overseas. It's on a love Allah, because if it only said the case where he borrowed money against it, you would argue that that can't be considered bittul. Since he didn't actually sell it outright, that can't be considered a bittul. But if a building collapsed on top of it, then you could argue midaloy kamatnila, given that he's not going to the trouble of trying to steal away the rubble, aim of a tuli batla, you could argue maybe he was actually mevatla at that point.
Basically.
So therefore the Braisa needed to mention that case also. On the other hand, the Itana Nafla Alamapolis, but let's go further. If it only mention that case of the rubble, then you would say Mishum Desavar Ha Manchas, because after all, we can say maybe the guy is not Mavapal, because he figures, look, okay, it's still there. I know exactly where it is under the rubble. Kol Amos Tabina Losha Kilmala. So fine, right now I don't have the time or I don't have the energy or whatever to deal with it.
Anytime
I need it, I know exactly where it is and I can get it. But if robbers stole it, and therefore if he doesn't do something, it's going to be lost forever. You would argue that Yush, given that he's not seeking out to try and get it back, but totally Batla, maybe he was Mabatla, so therefore we need that one also. And further, if it only mentioned the case where robbers stole it, you could say the reason why it's not bottle is, even though on the one hand, so each one is a bigger chiddush than the previous one, and that's a common way of doing it. In other words, the Gemara doesn't have to ask back, well, why does it mention last case, and we'll understand all the other ones from it, because that kind of thing is a common thing. Loi zu, ach zu, not only in this case, which is less of a chiddush, but even in this case, which is more of a chiddush. That's a common way of doing it. So that's what it's doing over here. So that's what the Gemara doesn't end up asking. Well, why doesn't it mention the case where? Why doesn't it mention the case where they left it and went overseas and we'd automatically deduce all the other ones from it? Because it's common enough for Bryce to do this. But anyway, why would we? Why on the other hand could we argue if robbers stole it? Even though on the face of it, if he doesn't get it back soon, it's going to be gone forever. Still, you could argue we shouldn't have stopped it because the guy may figure, I have no reason to think that it should be bottled. If it's a guy who stole it, mislach palach, well, okay, no problem. That guy himself may end up getting attracted to it and worship it, and therefore it'll still continue to be worshipped. Therefore, I'm not being a vassalate. Or Yisrael Shakla, or if it's a Jewish robber who took it, he could argue to himself, I did it a mere Yikorin, given that an Avodah Zarah is worth a lot of money, it's worth more than just the value of the raw materials made out of. This yid may turn around and sell it to another guy who will worship it. So therefore, maybe the original owner, you know, may not have the right to Rabbi Alafa, but nevertheless, he may still do it anyway, and at least the guy may not necessarily be familiar with that level of detail of Alafa. So therefore, the guy, the original owner, is not necessarily Mavapala, because he figures that the likelihood is that it's going to continue being worshipped.
How can we take Koyidin?
Very nice. They have a cheskes kasher. It doesn't mean that the goy doesn't know about that cheskes kasher.
No, but it is there.
No, but the point is the goy is not necessarily mevakol in his mind because he figures that that it may end up in. Avol hinichua bailim v'holcholim dinasiyam. And besides, I mean, the truth is it could be done behetzer also. I mean, what if, for example, the Jewish listim, for example, find a goy who is willing to be mevakolit without having to be forced into it, and as we said before, as the Mordechai says, and the Amar brings, therefore it's enough for him to be mevachalot verbally. So now the yid has a statue which is perfectly mutter to use. Now then, okay, he may one day decide to go and sell it, and the buyer may be somebody who decides to start reusing it as an avodah zarah. So the yid didn't do anything wrong in principle, but yeah.
Can you, it's mutter. But don't you have to ask the goy what he wants to do with it? And if he tells you he wants to do avodah zarah,
who says he wants to do? No, the goy was mevakolit. He was mevakolit. Right. You, the Jew, are now you go and sell eventually. Sell it to a second goy, and maybe it'll be with neighbor. Okay, so maybe you sell it to somebody else. You sell it, let's say, to another goy who's not an avodah zarah, and he ends up selling it to another one who's listening to listen. Whatever. There are ways in which it could be. Yeah. But the fourth case of the Braisa, if the owner abandoned the statue and went overseas, then you should argue, well, for sure, the fact that he didn't take the statue with him, obviously you should argue he must have been mevatelet. And yet the halacha is that not. So that's why we needed all four cases of the Braisa. Because each one is a greater chiddush than the previous one, that even though we would have a reason to think that he was mevatelet, nevertheless we say he's not. As long as he intends to return at some point. Okay. So now let's analyze the wording. Well, that's the chiddush. So now let's analyze the next part of the wording of the Braisa. We said he must sit in lachta to Mechamas Yeshua. If they're going to eventually return, like they did after the wars of Yeshua, ain't a betela, then it's not bottle. What do you mean? Midi Mechamas Yeshua mia de'adr. Did the goyim return after Yeshua's wars? Either they were killed or they left the country.
What
does it mean? What's the point of the comparison to Mochamas Yeshua? Mochamas Yeshua, the goyim never returned to reclaim. That's the question.
Right.
The answer is Hachokama. He must sit in laughter if they intend to return. Harehu Mochamas Yeshua. Then we consider it has the same din as the wars of Yeshua, the Ein Labatela, and therefore the Avodah Zarah is not bothered. In other words, let's consider what happened when Yeshua leads the Jewish people to conquer Eretz Yisrael. The Amorim, the various nations over there, had no reason to think that they were going to lose. As far as they knew, they're powerful nations. You had the Gugoshim left. Everybody else decided to stay on and fight. Why? Because they figured it'll be easy. We'll wipe out the Jewish people, and we'll continue living where we've been living for hundreds of years.
What happened?
So therefore, what happens? Every time they leave one of those cities to go out and fight, they have every intention of returning the next day or whenever the battle's over, and continuing with their other disorders. In the event, their plans didn't work out because they got killed in battle. But nonetheless, they intended to come back and worship them. Therefore, they weren't mevatel them before they left. Therefore, now, when the Jews come and take over those cities, they find avodah zarahs that are now not mevatel, and therefore, they have to destroy them. That's the point. That's the comparison to Mohammed Yeshua. When you have a situation where the guy intends to come and reclaim his avodah zarah, then he's not mevatel it, and therefore, that is why when the Jewish people came in under the leadership of Yeshua, they had to destroy all the avodah zarah they found because they hadn't been mevatel. Okay. So then the question is, so why does the Braisa bother using that comparison? Just say flat out, it's not mevatel, period.
Right.
The answer is milsa agav urcha kamashkulan. Yes, but the Braisa, the Tana of the Braisa, wanted to teach us another din incidentally. Agav urcha means incidentally. But with his wording about Melchamas Yeshua, the Tana wanted to teach us another din. which is Kihad Amr, similar to Kihad Amr of Yehuda Amr Rab, similar to a din that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rab, which we learned last week. Yisrael Shazoka Pulvena Lishakrisla, if a Jew sets up on end a brick intending to worship it, but he didn't actually worship it yet, he didn't actually bow down to it yet. And then along comes a guy and does bow down to it. He sees this brick on its end and he goes and worships it. Also,
right.
At that point, the guy after that brick, even though now you should argue, a person cannot after something that doesn't belong to him. Nevertheless, the guy has the ability to make this brick off.
Well, the brick was Esker to begin with.
Now, it wasn't Esker. It belonged to the Jew.
It belonged to the Jew.
But because he set it up on end, so the question is, Manolon da Osra, so where do we know this concept? How do we get this concept of the goy by bounds?
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't belong to
the Jew.
It belonged to the Jew, nevertheless. Right.
Bound.
How do we know that there's this concept that the goy has the ability to answer it? Amar Abulazah Kitchilo Shalot Israel. So Abulazah says, because it's the same situation as happened when the Jewish people first entered Eretz Israel. So that's what we mean, Milchemeth Yeshua. That's the point why the Braita is mentioning Milchemeth Yeshua, to allude to this concept. That when the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael to begin with, all the Avodah Zarahs were possible on the basis of this din. Were also Bahana on the basis of this din. Namely as follows. We have to think of it like this. Now the Pasuk says, and repeats a number of times in Sukkim, that when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you have to burn down the Asherim. So you have to ask, why should the Asherim be offered? Let's consider, Eretz Yisrael was already an inheritance of ours, the Jewish people, ever since the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Ein Adam Oisa Dava Shein Shalai. So therefore, if now you have, let's say, a tree that it belonged to Avraham and his descendants. So how do the Goyim have the ability to ask for it? Yes, they're living there. Yes, as far as they consider themselves the masters of the land. But the fact is they're not. The fact is already from when Hashem
promised. This was before.
Even before Mount Torah, once Hashem promised the land to Avraham, then Avraham already acquired it at that point. Especially we learned in Baba Basra the possibility that Avraham actually acquired it by Kumis Halef Ma'aretz. We do that back and forth. So whatever the point is, that at that point it's already considered it belongs to us. So by that logic, the same way, in other words, again, the same way as typically, a goy is not able to take, or for that matter, another yid, is not able to take, if Reuven has an object, then another yid, Shimon, or goy, Tony, is not able to take it and make it also for Avodah Zarah, because Ein Adam Oseh Davar Shein Shalo, that we discussed yesterday in connection with the Kalim of the Mishnah. How can it be that the goyim were able to after the Asherah, the trees in Eretz Yisrael, which they have to be cut down? You're going to argue maybe the problem is that you have trees that existed in Eretz Yisrael before it was promised to Abraham, and now by the time they come into Eretz Yisrael, those trees are 500 years old. Well, that's the point. The bitul of Alma Sagilu. Fine. All you should need is bitul. Meaning, in other words, again, they belong to they belong to the goyim. But we said one goy is able to be mevatel another goy's of a dezara. So all you need to do is when you first come into Eretz Yisrael, force the local goyim to be mevatel any trees that existed before Avraham Avinu's times and are still being worshipped. Any ones that started growing after Avraham Avinu's times should not be also in the first place, because the whole land from that point on belongs to Avraham, and therefore the goyim don't have the ability to make the trees offer.
Even if they were before Avraham, Hashem made the promise that the whole land belonged to Avraham and to the Jewish people.
Maybe, but okay. Still, you could say, an Asherah doesn't always have to be a tree that's still rooted in the ground. It's not to be a pole or something. So, fine, then in that case, that's not part of the land, but still, fine, you could argue that they belong to the goyim. There is also a point that a couple of the Acharonim make, that we're not going to say, the point is, we're not going to say when Hashem promises the land to Abraham, that he's going to give him something which at this point is usur, such that now you'd have a problem. Remember, we learned before, if a Jew gets a hold of a goy of a dezara, and it comes into his possession, then it can never be nisbatel. We're not going to say that Hashem is going to give Abraham, let's say right now you have a tree that for the last 50 years the goyim have been worshipping, because now as soon as it comes into Abraham's possession, it will never be able to be nisbatel. So Fakir, the promise that Hashem gave Abraham to that he'll inherit, that he and his descendants will own and inherit Eretz Yisrael, will not apply to those trees. Those will remain the possession of the goyim, but those therefore can be nisbatel, like anything that belongs to a goy. So we're still back to the question. So if the tree existed before Abraham, then it never belonged to him and his descendants, but it can be nisbatel. if we're talking about a tree that started growing after Avraham was promised Eretz Yisrael, then the Goyim have no ability to create an Isuan in any way, because not theirs. So why do they have to destroy all the Asherim? The answer is, Ella, no. The reason is like this. Midepochu Yisrael la'ego, once the Jewish people worship the ego, Golova da'atayu d'nichaluhu v'avaris l'chavim, therefore they demonstrated that their das is, they like Avodah Zarah. They approve of Avodah Zarah being done.
Therefore,
he also Avodah Zarah. So now when the Goyim come along and worship the trees, Shlichut Didhu Avdi. Now they're acting effectively as Shluchim of the Jewish people in worshiping those. Okay, different acronym talk about it. It's not necessarily technically Shlichut, because the technical definition of Shlichut, one Goy can't really be a Goy can't really be a Shliach on behalf of a Yid. But nevertheless, it's still, so it's a loose kind of Shlichut.
Number two, but that just is a Ches HaEgel. They didn't say that every single...
Hold on, that's what the Gemara is going to say in a second. But wait, the point is, Hachinami, so therefore by the same logic, now going back to Rav Yehuda's din, to Rav Yehuda Amarav din, about a Jew sets up a brick and a Goy worships it. Same idea, you throw to Zokah Flavina, if a Jew sets up a brick, intending to worship it, Galya Daiti the Nichalei Avodah Zarah. By that he demonstrates that he likes Avodah Zarah and approves of it. Therefore, he also Shlichav Mapolach. And now, when the goat comes and worships it, Shlichus Adidei Ka'ovid, he's acting in effect as a shliach of the Jew, and that is how he has the ability to ask for it, even though it's not his own. So that is why our Braisa at the top of the Amud used the expression Kimochemes Yeshua to allude to this din. Why is it by Mochemes Yeshua they had to destroy the Asherus? Because previously they had worshipped the eagle, and now the goy has, and now the goy, and Eretz Yisrael have the ability to make those trees also.
Yeah, but they just worshipped the eagle. They didn't worship the
tree. So that's the question. The dilma of the eagle who the nichalahu b'midi achrin aloi, maybe they only liked the eagle. Who says necessarily they meant to worship, they meant to approve of other kinds of Avodah Zarah? Especially you have Mefoshim on, Parshas Kisita, who argue that they weren't even necessarily originally conceiving of the eagle as pure of a desire, as in worshipping some power other than Hashem. They meant it as a way to serve Hashem, they meant it as a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu, or whatever. Some say that. Ramban, for example, brings on a Pesukim, they have different opinions about it, but yeah. So anyway, the answer is, Omakro, yes, but you have the Pesuk says, Ela Elekecha Yisrael, yes, the Pesuk says, when they made the Egel, they say, these, in plural, are your gods, also in plural, Yisrael, Melamach, evil Lelekois Habi, which means that they desired many gods. So even if we argue that the eagle itself was only one type of Avodah Zarah, or even if we argue it wasn't Avodah Zarah at all, it was meant originally as a way of worshipping Hashem, nevertheless, that led them into that now they desire all kinds of other gods. But nevertheless, though, that's what they did. And therefore, that means they approved
the
Eila Lekecha Yisrael, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, so now it means that they approve of many different types of Avodah Zarah, therefore the Goyim have the ability to do it on their behalf. So the question is, Eima called Bahadi Ego Mitzuru. Fine, but still, even so we should argue that all the trees that existed at the time the Ego was made should be also fine, because those are Mikan Ve'elach Nishri, but we should argue maybe that any Asherus that was planted after that should be Mutter, because they didn't exist at that time, and afterwards they did Shuvah, and they don't desire El Kutz Havi anymore.
So they had the expression in the future when they said,
No, they only said El Kutz Havi Yisrael at that one time, and then afterwards they did Shuvah, and now Moshe destroyed the eagle, and he got everybody to do Shuvah.
Okay,
the Gemara answer is Man Moichah, fine, but how are you going to know? You're not going to know which trees existed at that time, which ones were worshipped rather at that time, versus which ones were only started being worshipped later. So therefore, practically speaking, you have to ask all of them. A couple of, there's a verse that's brought from a couple of different people. I've seen it from Yitzchak Abramsky and from other people that say an interesting nuance on that. The first time the Torah starts talking about the Dinim, that you have to destroy every disorder when you come into Eretz Yisrael, is in Parshas Mishpat. And there it mentions that you have to destroy their mizbechas and their pillars and whatnot. It doesn't say anything about Asherus. The next time in the Torah, in Parshas Kisisa, where many of these things are repeated, there for the first time it mentions about destroying Asherus. Why the difference? Based on our Gemara over here. Parshas Mishpatim was before the Chet HaEgel. At that point, the Asherus would have been Mutter on the basis of our Gemara over here. Only in Parshas Kisisa, after the Chet HaEgel, when Hashem is restating these Dinim to Moshe, at that point a new detail is added that now, because of what they did with the eagle, now the Asherus are altered.
We say the Torah is not chronological.
The Torah is not always chronological, but the fact is, we see that Parshas Mishpatim was said shortly after, right after Matan Torah, or at Matan Torah, or shortly after it, whatever, and where before Chetegel, whereas Parshas was said afterwards. So therefore, yes. So therefore, the Torah phrases it that way to hint that because of the dinim that it says in this Gemara. Okay. Mishnah says, Avodas kechavim shenichu ozer, and Avodah Zarah that was abandoned by its worshippers, and they don't plan to return. The Chomins abandon it, yes. So they abandon it, and now, in the Gemara before, we said that if they plan to return, then we said it's not possible. But here, we're talking about they never plan to return. But the difference is, they don't plan to. But the question is, why did they abandon it? What were the circumstances? Bishas Shalom, if it was a time of peace, Muteris. Then it's Muter, because at that point, they left knowingly, they left voluntarily, they didn't take it with them, so obviously they were about it. On the other hand, Bishas Mochama, sort of, but if they left because of war, then it's also because that, fine, they were in a panic, they were in a hurry, whatever, yeah, not even necessarily they intended to come back. Fine, the land has been taken over by their enemies, they have no plans to return, but nevertheless, the fact that Bishas Mochama, it was an oinus, they didn't necessarily leave it behind willingly, they may have left it behind because they don't have the ability to take it along or whatever. Another thing, bimusyois shomolochim, pedestals of kings. So what are pedestals of kings? So Rashi describes as follows. These are, when you have a place where the king is going to come by in a procession, so they have these hewn stones, these big stone pedestals set up along the sides. When the king is going to be passing through there, they put Avodah Zarah statues on those pedestals, and the king bows to them as he goes by. So those pedestals, Harel and Mutaris, they are Mutar Bana. The Pneshim Amidinos, the Bashar Shamalachim Ozen, because they put it up when the king is passing by. In other words, they're not meant as a permanent place for Avodah Zarah. They're only a temporary thing. Well, we'll see in the Gemara, how does that help anything? It's a temporary thing. It's still used for Avodah Zarah. The point also, Rashi makes the point, is that, actually, Rashi doesn't say it so explicitly, but other Mephoshim say the verse is that even though the main focus of worship is the statue on top of the pedestal, nevertheless, they do also worship the pedestal. They do consider it to be a divine thing also, and therefore, we can argue whether it's Moser or Oster. So we're saying, since it's only put up for the kings to pass by, therefore, yes. The Rambam has a different understanding of it, by the way. The Rambam's understanding of the Musaris Shomolochin is basically that they would set up pedestals, the statues of the king, as long as he's alive, and they would worship them. Then eventually when the king dies, they remove those, and they put up new ones with a successor. So therefore, the old ones now are Musar, because now they don't worship them anymore. Effectively, they don't them. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba Amar Rav, in this connection, Base Nimrod, the house of Nimrod, meaning the Tower of Babel that they built under the leadership of Nimrod, that has the din of an Avodah Zarah that was abandoned by its worshippers in a time of peace, therefore Musar, and therefore what's left of it now is Musar. We learned in Sanhedrin that, what is it, one third of it was burnt, one third of it sank into the ground, and one third of it is still intact.
Where is it?
That is someplace in Babel, I don't know. But that place is someplace in Iraq, but that piece, that one third of it that still exists, is Musar Bahana. We consider that the fact that they didn't return. Because even though we can argue, Hashem forcibly scattered them from there, so that ought to be considered like a shas melchama, it was an onus, and according to our mission, it shouldn't be bottled. However, the difference is, however, later on, the goyim had the ability to return, if they had wanted, still physically there, and they know where it is, and they didn't. Therefore, midloy hodr, batuli batla, therefore, since they didn't return, then they're mevatalot, and therefore, there's consider them mevatalot, and therefore, we're allowed to have on.
And if they had built wherever they were, an image or statue exactly the same as the one that was abandoned.
Okay, so I mean they abandoned the old one, and now they have a new one. So, yeah. Okay. Again, when we said before, all this time we've been talking about a goy being mevatal and Avodah Zarah, doesn't mean, for example, that he no longer believes in that particular deity. All it means is this particular statue is not being used, I'm not going to be using it for worship anymore, or whatever, yeah.
Right. And then it's
Mavata. Yeah, that's done, yeah. Okay. So then we said in the Mishnah, we said these pedestals for kings are Mutter. And we said because they only put them up when the kings are passing by. So what does that mean? What's the logic? Because they put them up only when the king is passing by, therefore they should be Mutter. The fact is, when the king passes by, they put statues on them and they're worshipped.
No, yeah. We said that if they plan not to come back.
No, but that's the question. In other words, why are we saying they're Mutter?
If one time passes by,
No, but on at this point, the Gemara assumes that what it means is each time the king passes by, they're going to be reusing these same pedestals.
And it's not the case.
That's the answer is, because they set it up to begin with when the king is going to be passing by this way.
Right.
However, sometimes the king doesn't necessarily pass this way,
right.
He may go a completely different way. So therefore, it can't be considered Masham Shabbat Esuchabim, because it's not like it was ever, even necessarily ever used. And Tosfos adds the detail. When they put it, when the Goyish priests put them up, they only made them for the king's purposes. When they see that the king doesn't care to use it, then they themselves are Mavachalot as well. So therefore, there was Drizzle, and therefore it's Moshe. Speaking more about these pedestals, the Gemara tells, Ki Osa Ula, when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, one time, Yosef Abimsa Pegima, he sat down on one of these pedestals that was damaged. It wasn't completely destroyed, but there was a nick in it or whatever.
It was not Osir.
That he held, it's not Osir. Omelet of Yehuda Lola, said of Yehuda asked Ola, well, Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayu, don't Rav and Shmuel both say, Bimus Shenifgam Osir, that a Bimus, a pedestal like this, which was nicked, is still Osir. It has to be mostly destroyed in order to be Mutabana. And he continues, now here we're not talking about the kind of temporary pedestals that we're talking about in the Mishnah, because those we said are Mutabana. We're talking about a pedestal that was meant as an ongoing thing that's going to be used to Avodah Zarah, but now it's nicked, and now it's partly damaged. Nevertheless, Rav and Shmuel say that's not enough. It would have to be, most of it would have to be destroyed to be Mutabana. And even if you follow the opinion, as we talk about at the end of the previous parak, that when an Avodah Zarah is broken, Goyim are not going to worship the pieces.
So
the difference is, so therefore you should argue that here this is a piece. The difference is, Hani Mili Avodah Kavim, that's true as far as the actual statue itself. The Zilabe Milsal Mirflach Lashvarim, because a Goyim would consider it beneath his dignity to worship pieces.
But
when it comes to a pedestal, just because it has a little bit of damage in it, they don't care. They can still continue worshipping the pedestal and still continue it a suitable place to put a Vodazara. So how are you sitting on it? It should be also Bahana. Amalei, so Ula answers in a very respectful way of speaking about Rav and Shmuel. Man Yoivon after the Rav Shmuel Malinun Ayin, if only someone would give us some of the dust from Rav and Shmuel, from their graves, that we would fill up our eyes with it. And it was a respectful way of saying, with all due respect to Rav and Shmuel, but Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, Dami Tavayo, on the other hand, against them, we have Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, who both say, Bimus Shenifka Mutter. They say that no, Bimus that was damaged is Mutter. It doesn't have to be completely
destroyed. Wait a minute, would you consider that a gum?
What do you mean?
A little nick?
Yeah, a little. I mean, the point is, it was big enough to be noticeable.
Gum.
The point is, it was big enough to be noticeable, but it's not big enough that it's still most of the bimos are still intact.
Okay.
So fine. You, Rabbi Yehuda, are telling me Rav and Shmuel, with all due respect to Rav and Shmuel, nevertheless, I'm following what Rabbi Yehuda and Rish Lakish say. Because they say, if I care, even if we take the view that we said at the end of the previous parak, that that even when a desert breaks up, the goyim will still worship the The difference is Hanimil Avodas Chagim. That applies to the statue itself. The kid in the polka, once he started worshipping it, Zilabe Milsa Levatula. He considers it a disgraceful thing to go and Mimavatula. Just because it's broken, okay, the pieces are still usable.
Once it's been worshipped.
Avahani. But when it comes to a Bimus, they consider them interchangeable. Shakli Lahayu Maisu Bimus Achrina. If they see there's a pagam in it, they're not going to continue using it. They'll remove it, and they'll bring a new stone for it. So therefore, it's not really like an Avodah Zarah. Once there's a pagam in it, they're already going to give up on it. So therefore, that's what Rav and Shmuel. So they hold, and not Rav and Shmuel, Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish. Therefore, Ola says, I'm entitled to follow that opinion, and therefore I can sit on this Bimus. In fact, Tanya, well, in general, when first of all, Gemara is going to bring a braisa like Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. But second of all, in general, we have a rule. When we have a machloket to Rav and Rabbi Yechon, and the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yechon. So it is over here also. Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. Indeed, we learn a braisa in accordance with Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. Bimus shenifkam mutzer. If a bimus is partially damaged, then it's mutzer b'hana, because then we consider it fossil. Mizbeach shenifkam also, on the other hand, an altar that they use to sacrifice in honor of Avodah Zarah, that is also, that still remains also b'hana, adshi notik zrubay, until most of it is torn down. So, heichidami bimus, heichidami mizbeach. How do we know which one is a bimus that they use as a pedestal for Avodah Zarah versus a mizbeach that's used for sacrifices?
Right.
How? It's like this. Bimus is even achas mibeachas avonim harbe. A bimus is made out of one big stone that was carved or whatever to make a pedestal. A mizbeach is something built out of many stones.
Is that correct?
Well, that's
correct.
The mizbeach and the bismitzah was built out of many stones, but also...
It wasn't built on one stone.
No, as a matter of fact, actually, Rashi mentions in Parsha Shrokim, it says, don't make a maseva, which Hashem hates. A maseva is one stone, like a bimus. The difference is a bimus is meant as a pedestal. A maseva is also to sacrifice on. But the point is, Rashi says, in the times of the Ovis, a maseva was fine. We find Yaakov putting up a maseva, for example. But afterwards, the Goyim took that kind of thing over, and therefore it became snua lefonav, it became hated by Hashem, and therefore the pasuk says, that Hashem hates for such a thing to be done. You can only build a mizbeach out of many stones.
What's the
deeper meaning behind it, the Rav Shlomo Shnuchol Hirsch explains what the verse is. One stone represents like how it comes out of nature. A mizbeach built out of many stones implies human effort. So therefore, and he explains something along the lines of it. Before Matan Torah, we didn't have the Torah yet, and we knew it, so the others kept the whole Torah, but nevertheless, a major way of discovering about Hashem was through analyzing nature, like Avraham Avinu did, considering how everything works together so perfectly, and he deduced from that there's an age there. So therefore, a maseva at that time in history is fine, to worship Hashem using a natural stone, but afterwards, after Matan Torah, it's not enough for that. You have to actually be doing mitzvahs, you have to actually be putting human effort into it, and therefore, a maseva now is off limits. Now the main thing is a mizbeach, that you actually put together using your own efforts out of many stones.
Even if the goyim used many stones out of the Zara?
No. So the
Merkonis, for instance?
No, but that's a pile. Here we're talking about a mizbeach built out of many stones. But yeah, the point is, after Matan Torah, to build a maseva and offer on it to Hashem is also to build a mizbeach, that's a mitzvah. Omer Chizkiya Maikra, so Chizkiya says, where do we have a pasuk that expresses this idea, that we see that a mizbeach, by definition, is made out of many stones, and also the detail that we said before, that from the Braita, that it's only also, that it only becomes mutter when most of it is torn down. By the way, Tosfos points out, obviously Chizkiya being Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe, he's not explaining what Rabbi Yochanan just said. He's explaining the Braita before that said that a mizbeach is mutter only when most of it is torn down, which immediately implies that it's made out of many stones, and therefore most of it can be torn down. So Chizkiya is going to explain where the pasuk where we see that. Pasuk says in Yeshaya, "B'sumay how are the Jewish people going to be forgiven their avedus? B'sumay kol avne mizbeach ka'avne gir minu pasuk, when they make all the stones of the mizbeach like broken up pieces of gravel." Lo yakumu asherim v'chamonim. Then asherim, asherah trees, and chamonim, which are images in honor of the sun, will no longer arise. Meaning, if the mizbeach has been reduced to the point that it's like broken pieces of gravel, so most of it has been torn down, then lo yakumu asherim v'chamonim. Then asherim and chamonim will no longer be worshipped in association with it. They will no longer use such a mizbeach for karbonis, therefore it's bottle. But if not, most of it has not been torn down into little pieces of gravel, then yakumu, then they might arise again and continue using it for avodah zarah, for sacrifices, therefore it's not lost. So we see both. We see that it's made out of many stones, because kol avnim is there, and we see that most of it has to be torn down. Or actually, I mean, the pasuk says kol avnim is there, but okay, as usual, Tosfos Rid says, as usual, rubrik is kol. Once most of it has been torn down, it's the equivalent of all of it. Right. Okay. Tana. A braisa says, new topic. Summarizing over here. This next piece doesn't really directly seem to be related to our Mishnah. This is more like now that we're done with the various dinim involving avodah zarah. So now the Gemara has one last chance, kind of, to talk about about certain dinim involving what's considered something that's worship for avodah zarah or not. When can something become osur by people worshiping it versus when not?
But we still didn't explain exactly how goy is mevatel.
We said that if he dents it or he cuts off a finger.
He doesn't have to make a declaration. He doesn't.
No. So again, you have the Mordechai's point, which the Namah brings, that if he's doing it willingly, then all he has to do is verbally say, "I'm mevatel it." Or we said
did we see that in the Gemara?
Well, by implication, because for example, we have the case over here where we said in our Mishnah, we said, for example, that an avodah zarah that was abandoned by its worshippers and they don't plan to ever return to it is lawful. So they didn't cut off a nose and
say it.
That's the point. So maybe they don't even have to say anything. Maybe they can just think it.
Right.
But that's where they're doing it willingly. where they're doing it unwillingly, where you have to force them to do it, like in the story in the previous paragraph, then they have to actually, no, they don't have to say something, but they actually have to do something. They have to break off the tip of the nose or the finger or dent it or whatever. Tana, we learn in a braisa, nevad shaloi osur v'shachaveirin mutter. An animal that was worshipped, where we talked about before, that an animal that's worshipped does not become osur b'hana to a head yet, because there's no tfisat yidei adam in it, it wasn't made by human hands. On the other hand, we said that it is osur to bring as a korban to Hashem, because it's disgusting to use such a thing as a korban for Hashem. So nevad shaloi osur v'shachaveirin mutter. So if the animal belonged to him himself, and him, the person, so let's say Reuven owns an animal, and he bowed down to it. Now that animal becomes also as a korban. But on the other hand, if the animal belonged to Reuven and Shimon bowed down to it, then it does not become also, even for a korban.
As opposed to the goy who come and...
Well, so whether we're talking goy or Jew, we'll talk about more on Omer Beis, actually, which we'll get to tomorrow, about the details. But for the moment, it doesn't really matter. For the moment, let's just talk about we have the owner and we have somebody else. For the moment, we're not worrying about whether the owner and the other person are Jews or goy. We'll revisit that later. But right now, we're saying that only the person himself who owns it, who bows down to it, has the ability to ask for it as a carbon. Again, it will still be mutter b'hediyot because it won't be considered to that extent of a dezara because it's a natural thing, like the mountains and the hills and whatever. On the other hand, it'll be also for a korban if it belongs to him. Okay. The Gemara says, Urmini, but I have a contradiction to that. Another braisa says, Ezehu nevad, what is the definition of an animal that is nevad, which is also to bring as a korban? Kol she'ov jimot, so whether it is worshipped, whether it's bowed down to or otherwise worshipped, bein b'shogig or bein b'mezid or bein b'onis, bein b'rotzen. Whether it was b'shogig, that he didn't know it was also to do that, b'mezid, that he knew it was, b'onis, somebody forced him, or bein b'rotzen, or whether he did it willingly. So we have to ask, hai onis hechidomi. What is the case of onis over here? Lav k'goin to onas behemet chaber v'yishtakvala. L'chora, onis means that he took somebody else's animal by force and bowed down to it, and the braisa is saying that it's still considered neva. So what are you telling me that if Shimon bows down to Reuven's animal, it's not also, it seems from this braisa, since it says onus, that's exactly the case when it would be also. That's if you say that. Omar, Rami Bachama, loy. So Rami Bachama says, no, that's not the meaning of onus in our braisa. Kigoyim sha'amsu, obdikhovim v'yishkachvala behem tedidei. Suppose that Goyim forced the owner himself to bow down to his own animal. Not to somebody else's animal, to his own animal. Now, Tosus makes a distinction, by the way. There's two types of onus. One type of onus could be that they actually physically bow him down, bend him. That's for sure we're not talking about, because that can't
that's
be.
Not.
That's not. That wouldn't make it also, because that he's not doing anything. They're using him for that. What it means is the kind of onus we're talking about over here is where they tell him, for example, if you don't bow down to this idol, we will kill you. And he then goes and bows down.
That's considered
oinus. And we're saying that makes the animal considered neva. But we're talking about the animal belonging to him, not that it belongs to somebody else. It masks for Rav Zeira. However, Rav Zeira asks on that, what are you talking about? How could you say that would make it neva? We know the concept oinus rachmana pasre, something that took place, but oinus, the Torah passes him from punishment for it. Dichtiv lanaro leisasadava. And we know that because the Torah tells us when it comes to arayas, and when it comes to Arayas, which is also one of the big three after all, that when you have a Naira Moirosa was raped, that we say, well, Naira Lysasadava, to her you shouldn't do anything, you don't punish her, because it was bonus. So therefore, the point is, if it was bonus...
And if you force another Jew to have relations with...
Never mind that, we're not talking about that. The point is, this Yid himself, Reuven, who owned this animal, and Goyim forced him to bow down to his very own animal, was saying that he's not punishable, is not punishable. Therefore, Rav Zeira is arguing, therefore, it shouldn't be considered nevad either. Now, Tosfos discusses a little bit why that should be. Just because, fine, he may not be chayav to be most nefesh. Let's say, we're going to discuss in the Gemara whether he's chayav to or not, but nevertheless, why shouldn't that make it be considered nevad? So one thing is, some of the Achronim point out an idea that maybe what we say is, when we say that onus, rachmana pasre, what we mean is, therefore, an action done by onus, we don't even attribute it to him. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's considered as though it was done by itself. So he had no involvement. Well, in that case, if he had no involvement, then it shouldn't be considered never.
Huh.
Okay. So that's Rav Zeira's question. Yeah. Well, that's the question. Ella Omar Rava. So no, rather Rava says as follows. It's not really Ella. He's not really taking back what we said before. He's going to clarify what the situation is. It's like this. Hakol hoy b'chlal loy sodim. We have a general rule. The Torah says you're not allowed to worship of a dezala. But then we have a shaparat l'chakos of a chay b'hem b'loy shiyamos b'hem. Then the Torah gives, so you have a klal of loy sodim. You're not allowed to worship of a dezala. Then you have a prat. That the chaybahem v'loishu yomosem, the Torah is meant to live by, not to die through it. So that is a prat telling you yotza oynes. That tells you to exclude the case
okay.
where a person worshipped a v'dazara b'oynes. But then the hoder, hold on. The hoder kosev rachmona v'loishu chalol v'shem kaji. Then later on you have a klal where the Torah says, don't desecrate my holy name, implying da'afilu b'oynes. Implying that even ba'onis you're not allowed to. So what is it? Do we say b'chai b'hem, therefore you should violate the mitzvah, you should worship Avodah Zarah to save your life, or would it be b'lo tzachal l'Hashem kachi, that you're not allowed to do that?
What do you mean?
Okay, you have, like this, the Torah starts off by saying you're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
Then the Torah carves out an exception saying if it was ba'onis, then it's okay.
Yeah.
B'chai b'hem. But then the Torah says, "V'lo tzachal l'Hashem kachi." You have to be willing to die on the siddur of nefesh. So what is it? What are the scenarios? When do you have to be most in nefesh versus when do you say v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamos b'hem? The answer is okay. That hobet sina v'hobet pahasya. The difference is whether it's in private or in public. Now, actually, that distinction between private and public is true as far as most mitzvahs. It's actually not true as far as, it's actually, la halacha is not true as far as Avodah Zarah. You have the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the whole sugya about Kiddush Hashem that we learned about in Sanhedrin. Rabbi Shmuel actually holds that way. That even Avodah Zarah, if it's Betzina, Yavaval Yahori. You should be willing to worship Avodah Zarah Betzina rather than be most, and you don't have to be most Nefesh. On the face of it, the halacha is not like that. So that's Tosfos discusses over here that the halacha is not like that. That Avodas Kovim, Gilei Arayos, and Shvichos Damim are the big three. Those you have to be most in nefesh for. Those you have to be most in nefesh for, even if, whether it's sinner or perhaps. So Tosfos understands the Gemara here a little bit differently. What we're saying is the lois ta'ovge means that you have an azhara, you have a warning. You're not allowed to ever worship over the azhara. Then you have v'chai b'hem, meaning that you have, there's no azhara and there's no mitzvah. There is still, obviously, the essay. You still have the mitzvah, v'chol nafshecha, the essay mo'sa nefesh. But at least we should argue on the basis of v'chai b'hem, that if a person was over on that, he shouldn't be over on the lois ta'ovgeh. But then when it continues, v'chol l'shem kachi, then we're saying that the if it's b'chahesia, then you warned not to do it and you are chayav mitzvah. However, if you did it the tzina, then you still have you're not chayav misa, but you still were over. You still were over on Moshe Chalal Hashem Kodesh. So in other words, the bottom line, according to that way of understanding, you do have to be Moshe Nefesh Avodah Zarah, whether it's the tzina or the parhesia. The only difference is if you did it the tzina, then you're not chayav misa for it. And
what's the difference between Moshe Nefesh?
Because the difference is there's an azhara, the Torah warns you not to do something, and then there's a chayav misa. A chiyuv misa is only if the person did it b'meidit. So actually, even if it's b'hesi, he wouldn't necessarily be chayiv misa, because again, onus rachmana pasrei, as we said before. However, it would mean that he was over not only on the mitzvah fasei of v'ahavta, v'shem alakecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nashcha, but he's also over on the loisa seh v'loisa chalul shen kachi, and also on the loisa seh v'loisa alkeim. All this is not chayiv misa. So therefore, in other words, the point for our purposes is that Rava is saying, very well, it was an onus, and the Torah passes him from punishment, still doesn't mean that Avodah Zarah wasn't perpetrated over here. Therefore, the animal can be considered a neva.
But he would not be chayav
misa. He would not be chayav misa because he did it by onus.
What would he be chayav?
He'd be chayav, maybe he'd be chayav malchus, maybe not even. I mean, the Rambam says on it that, the fact of the matter is that if a person does that, if he's over rather than going Yehorek Val Yaver, then he was machal lot Hashem, which is a very serious thing.
Very serious.
Very serious, yeah.
Not
he wouldn't be chayav misa. He wouldn't necessarily be chayav any kind of penalty by the base in Shomata, because after all, it was an oinus. But nevertheless, he still bears the fact that he did, that he committed a chilul Hashem. Okay, so we'll continue. So we'll continue tomorrow about Hashem. But the point is still that the reason why the Gemara is bringing this in is actually it does relate back to our Mishnah. So it does end up relating back to our Mishnah, which is the next piece. But we'll learn that tomorrow about Hashem. But so far, what we have is, in other words, so on the face of it, so far, yes, you have a scenario where a person bows to his own animal, even though it was ba'onis, and nevertheless it's a nevah.
So he would be
when the Deshanaim Ichai, but we still don't have, so we still so far seem to be following what we said at the beginning, that if one person bows down to somebody else's animal, even if it was the mazid, he won't make it off, because Ein Adam Oseh Davar She'en Eshalo. So we'll continue with the discussion tomorrow and when we'll work out the exact parameters.
Are we going to demonstrate
we're going to talk about that actually there are cases where it is possible to ask somebody else's thing. We're going to discuss it tomorrow.
But generally not.
But generally not, yeah.